Mr. Atkind, reel 19.
Well, every morning a nurse would come into the ward and asked, who wants to go home, meaning back to Russia. And then I decided, after my unsuccessful attempt at escaping, that the only way is to suggest, to say that I am ready to go home, and then try to escape later. And that's what I did 2 days after my unsuccessful escape. I raised my arm together with three others, and we got up after breakfast, went downstairs, got our uniforms, our boots, and we were taken, a group of about 30 or 40, we were taken outside into the forecourt, and we were waiting for the lorry. And we were waiting for about half an hour, and I was getting tired standing. So I lay down, and some others as well. We were lying down on the grass, and everyone was quiet, nobody was talking. And no one was in charge of us. We were simply 30, 35 men in uniforms, no arms, just resting on the grass. And suddenly I got up and I just walked towards the gate. There were the two guards, but they didn't stop me, and I walked out. And again, I did exactly what I did when I was in Pilsen, in the prison. I walked out, but this time I was in a Russian uniform, and nobody stopped me. And the streets were quiet. It was a kind of a suburb of Prague. And I started walking faster, taking road to the left and right, thinking in case I would be followed. Didn't see anybody. The streets were sort of deserted. This was sort of 9 o'clock in the morning, quiet. And after a while, after walking like that for about quarter of an hour, 20 minutes, I heard footsteps some distance away. So I thought I was being followed, and I didn't know who it was. I didn't sort of look back, just walked fast. And I looked at the notices on the buildings, looking for a doctor. And eventually I found on one of the gates written, doctor so-and-so, first floor. So I walked up, I rang the bell, a maid opened and said, I said, I want to see. She was sort of surprised, a Russian soldier ringing the bell. So I said in my broken Russian, but in Czechoslovakia they can understand Polish and Russian. And I said, I would like to see the doctor. So she said, just a moment, the surgery doesn't start until for another hour. So I said, well, I'm very sorry, it's rather urgent, I would like to see him. And a minute later, the doctor came out and his wife came out and they asked me to come in. And I said, I'm not really a Russian soldier. I told them who I was and what it was. And I told them I was in a hospital in that. And I said, I'm not feeling well and I need to rest or to be taken to another hospital. And they took me onto the balcony on the first floor, and I lay down on like a deck chair or a reclining sort of chair. And they gave me coffee and rolls, and although I had already breakfast, I still started eating. My appetite was good, and I ate the rolls, butter, and drank the coffee, and told them more or less my story in a few words. Suddenly there was the bell rang, and a Czech policeman came in with a gun, and he was the one who was following me, and he found it a bit strange that he was sort of seeing that I was sort of walking from one street to the other, and he followed me. So he joined us, and he was also standing on the balcony, and they were listening to my story. And I said I was in Buchenwald, and I was in Lodz Ghetto, and in another camp, and then what happened, and that I was in the Russian hospital, but I'm not Russian, and that we were going back to Russia, and I would like to go to a hospital which is not for Russian prisoners of war. And, well, that sounds strange, but the policeman, he was like in a soldier's uniform, but he was a policeman, a green uniform, and he had a gun, a carbine, and he sort of by mistake pressed the trigger, and the bullet hit the balcony above, and I passed out. There was an explosion, and I just, everything went black, and he was just, and then I came back after about 2 minutes. I must have been unconscious for about 2 minutes, and he apologized to everyone that he by mistake pressed the trigger and the bullet hit the and that sort of made me go black for a minute or two. I realized immediately what happened, and he was very apologetic about it. And we spent an hour in there talking, and the doctor asked me what I wanted him to do. So I said, well, phone up an ordinary hospital where I could go and convalescent for and be examined and so on. So he phoned somewhere, and an hour later an ambulance arrived with stretchers. But I said, now I'm strong enough to walk, and I didn't want to be carried on the stretchers. So I walked down to the ambulance, and I was taken to another kind of building, which was not a hospital before, but was converted for the use of, and there were people from all kinds of camps. Many were Jewish, many were not. There were Hungarians and Dutch people, you name it, everyone from Europe. And some were feeling stronger and some were still bedridden. And I found myself in a place like that. And the nurses were not sort of real qualified nurses, but young women, young girls who sort of volunteered for this kind of work. And I spent there one night, and then I was moved to another hospital, which was a high school converted into a hospital. And I was put in a room with 12 Poles. They were not Jewish people, but Polish Catholics. And I was in that hospital for another 2 or 3 weeks.
Did you find that difficult, being with Polish people after what had happened?
Yes, it wasn't very pleasant, because first of all they looked at me, and then they soon realized I was Jewish, so they somewhat ostracized me. They didn't speak to me, and I didn't want to speak to them either. But I listened to their conversations, and they were talking about, they were intelligent, they gave me the impression of being an ex-university student, who must have been taken to Germany towards the end of the war to do some labor. And they were quite well informed of what was going on in Poland and in Europe in general. So I found that quite interesting. But I remember the sort of conversation, one of them saying, Poland will never be a communist state, a communist country, because the Russians are inferior people to us Poles. And therefore, anything that comes from the East, from Russia, is an inferior ideology, and we will never accept it. We are superior to the... So I thought, well, I am in the right sort of company, you know. And they ignored me, or now and then I would hear Jew, you know, sort of. So it wasn't very pleasant. And one of the Poles was hiding a German, one of the men amongst them. He couldn't speak Polish, and he was a German. But his friend, a Pole, was pretending that he was a Pole as well. And the other Poles knew about it and were sort of saying, I wonder what sort of, why is he hiding that other? They both must have some secrets, you know. But nothing happened. And I still didn't feel well. I was constipated. I mentioned to the doctor once, and they didn't do much. They didn't give me any medicine at all. It was just... I was becoming stronger. And then I met one of the fellows, one of the men, who was in the camp with me. And I was very pleased to see him, because for the first time I met somebody I knew and I could talk. And I told him, I'm very worried, because he was also moved from one hospital to another, or from one school to another. And we went onto the roof. The roof of the building was like a playground. And we were walking on the roof. And he said, I had the same problem as you, constipation. You should walk as much as possible. So I realized that he was right. So I started walking a lot on that roof, because it was quite a big area. You see, my problem was simply that I was lying in bed all day, couldn't sleep at night, and didn't do any exercise, and no one told me what to do. And when he mentioned that, I realized that he was right, and I started walking around for an hour at a time, and that cured my constipation, and I felt much stronger. And the problem why they kept people longer in the hospital than necessary, because they were waiting for clothing. As soon as they found something suitable, a pair of trousers, a couple of shirts and a pullover, or a jacket and a pair of shoes, they would make those that were stronger leave the hospital. So sometime in towards the end of June, when I went to the place where they were giving the clothing, they found something suitable for me, and I was out, and I walked out of the hospital. Now Prague, the weather was beautiful, and Prague was a beautiful city. Czech people were very nice. They would approach you, ask you where you were, where you came from. They would invite you for a meal. Restaurants would not ask you for money. Some Czech people would give you money. The tram cars were free. You didn't have to pay, because they said, no, if you were if you were captured by the Germans, the transport is free. You slept in any school that was, there were mattresses in every school, and there were refugees from all over Europe, and you just walked into a place and there was room and you slept. And I would meet friends, find out what was happening. The news from Poland was very bad.
Friends who you'd known before?
One or two whom I recognized from Lodz. You would meet people. There was one place called Charity, where you would go there and have meals. And it was run by nuns. A big cloister, sort of courtyard. You could, they would feed you. Food was no problem. And I would meet people who came back from Poland, and the news was not very good, that they were, some people, some Jews who returned, were being murdered. And they came back. And coming back to Czechoslovakia, crossing the border apparently was not too difficult. But after a while, the Czech people didn't want people to come back again. So they gave everybody sort of 4 weeks to leave Prague. And I met a friend who was already in Poland, and he said, whatever you do, don't go back, it's dangerous. And I was afraid to go back to Poland. I wanted to find out what happened to my sister, but at the same time I was afraid of going back. And what we decided to do with that friend, that in order to stay in Prague longer than the few weeks, you had to take a job. And so we went to a place which was like a labor exchange, maybe equivalent to that, and they said, well, the only jobs that are available are on farms. So we said, okay, we will work on a farm so long as it's near Prague. So they gave us an address of a farm just outside the tram car came to that stop, and just outside Prague, quite a large farm, two widows, Czech widows, who's middle-aged, whose husbands were killed during the war, needed help. And we started working on that farm. And it was a big farm, horses, cows, rabbits, pigs, you name it, very hard work. And for a few days, we enjoyed it. I became stronger physically, and I quite liked it. But I thought, well, what am I doing here? You know, I cannot just be a farm worker. I must find out what's going on, find my relatives in America. I had relatives in America and in Palestine. Write to them. And somehow I felt restless after a week. And then we got permission from the police to stay a month, got a permit. So we left the farm. We didn't get any pay for the week. We didn't want any. We simply left. But now with the permit to stay, to be allowed to stay for a month in Prague, we started walking about, meeting people, again went to the place called Charity, and trying to find out what was going on. And we used to go to the cinema every day, mainly Russian films, which we enjoyed immensely. They were Russian war films, propaganda, but they were excellent, about the Germans, the invasion, and then how I remember some of them. They were, we enjoyed them a lot. And then we met another friend, whom I knew from Lodge, there were three of us, and he said that there are in Theresienstadt, in Theresien, which is not north, not far away from Prague, you know, an hour's journey by train, there are people, young people, who will be going abroad, either to Switzerland or to Sweden or somewhere abroad. Why don't we go and join them? So we thought, yes. Then we met a few girls who knew those, one of the boys. I didn't know them from before the war, because they came from the small town where one of the friends came. And they invited us to a hotel where they stayed in Prague, a very big hotel. They invited us for tea, which we joined them, and they knew more about the Theresien, about the what happened. And they said, why don't you go there? There are young people, and they will be going abroad. They knew about it. So I worked out a plan. While we were having tea, I said, well, what we should do is tear up our identity cards and our permits to work and so on, because, and to say that we were in some, if they ask us, that we were in some village on a farm, resting somewhere, and therefore we have no papers and no identity, and now we are arriving in Theresien. And I mentioned to those four or five girls who were there, why don't you come with us? And they sort of looked at one another, giggled and said, and laughed and said, no, we will stay here, we are quite happy in here. And although I was quite sort of innocent about it, I realized what was going on. The hotel was full of Russian officers, and they were their girlfriends. And they were smart Russian captains and majors and other high-ranking officers, good-looking in their uniforms, milling in the hotel. And he had those 17, 18-year-old girls, pretty, young, having a good time. And I realized that no matter what I said and how convincing I was trying to be, they would just look at each other, laugh, and said, no, 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 we are very happy in here, we are staying here. So we said goodbye, and we went to the railway station. And on the railway station, I saw that fellow who I thought was dead. While I was queuing for the ticket, somebody touched me on my shoulder, and I turned around, and that was my friend from the group who crawled into a pipe, and then the German shot. And he explained, he told me, I nearly fainted when I saw him, because it has such an effect. If you think somebody is dead and then you see them, you really can faint. And he turned to his girlfriend, he was with a pretty girl, and he says, you see what I told you? And he sort of supported me, said, okay, I'll tell you my, relax, I'm alive, I'll tell you what happened. And he, did I say before what happened?
Well, that they both gone into
the plane. They both, and the other one was shot, and he pushed out the body, and then he met some girls, and yeah. And he asked me what I was doing. I said that I'm going with my friends to Theresien, and then we'll go somewhere abroad. And he was going to Luxembourg. He with his girlfriend, somehow he said, I know what I am doing, I'm going to Luxembourg. And we arrived in the late afternoon in Theresien. And the camp was guarded by Russian soldiers. And the Russian guard stopped us. He said, we are not allowed to go in, there is typhus epidemic. We have no right, we are not allowed to go there. Nothing helped, we couldn't, one of the, my friends was asking him and, but nothing happened, nothing, the Russian guard just laughed, said, go away, I'm not letting you in. We walked away, but half an hour later we met some young boy, well, teenage boys who were from the Terezin, from the camp, and they said, come, follow us, we know the way, they were smuggling. And they say, don't go there because the guards are standing there. And we went under a wall and we were inside the camp. In the camp we were, there was a Jewish man in charge, and he was, there were hundreds of people who survived, or maybe thousands, and we were put onto the list of the young people who were going to go abroad. We still didn't know where to. And we stayed there until the middle of August. Theresienstadt at that time, there was the typhoid epidemic, the hospital was full of very ill people, some were dying. I had typhoid fever before, so I was immune to it. There were lots of rats. When you went to the toilets, there were thousands and thousands of rats milling about. You ignored them and they ignored you. Because what happened, there were so many rats, that the Germans left vast quantities of tinned meat. And after the liberation, people were opening those tinned meats, but they couldn't finish after eating one or one and a half. They would throw the other half away, and the rat population just multiplied. And there were rumors later that the rats were so big and so powerful, they could open the tins themselves. Because the tins were pork, there was a lot of pork and beef, and they were very, very fat. And the rats varied from normal size to as big as cats. And I was afraid at night, I was a bit scared. It was a bit scary. If you want, you had to go to the huge latrines, because it is Theresienstadt, Theresien was built as a military sort of town from the medieval times, full of those big latrines for soldiers and old buildings and basements. And at night it was a bit scary because you could see those eyes looking at you and running in all directions. But if you didn't attack them, they didn't bother you. But there were thousands and thousands of them.